Tim McNally. Welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirits Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody. Welcome to the show. Brian Diaz here with you. The unofficial start of the weekend here in the Crescent City. Yeah, here, friends, on the NOLA Drinks Show, we like to say crazy things when other things are going on because we think the ratings are going to be higher. Not sure about the ratings on this show. Probably not that high, but that's what we do. Hey, you know, talking about when other things are going on, certainly lots of other things going on. We're going to get to some good things going on here in just a minute. But of course, you know, we're still trying to help out our friends to the west there, victims of Hurricane Harvey over there in Texas and southwest Louisiana. Please keep up the good work. They helped us during Hurricane Katrina so much. And yeah, we need to continue to help them out now, as we know from Katrina and Isaac and the flooding last year up by Baton Rouge. This is where the long slog, friends, begins. You know, there's a lot of bang right out of the gate and a lot of rush to help, lots of donations and stuff, but the recovery process is the long slog, and we need to be there for them. And it looks like we're going to need to be there for our friends to the east over there in Florida. I'm knocking on wood right now. Certainly some of our friends there in the Caribbean, in the Leeward Isles, in the Lesser and Greater Antilles are also going to need our help, and that's what we're about here. That's a frightening storm that's going on, as we know. So if you go to our Facebook page, NOLA Drinks, you'll see, scroll down a little bit, you'll see some great, very worthy activities that you can, places you can give to help out with Hurricane Harvey and as things emerge to help out our friends in the Caribbean and potentially Florida, and hopefully it doesn't come to that much, but it's not looking great. We'll be posting that stuff there as well, so please get involved and give as you can. Been a rough hurricane season. Hey, I will say this, here in this part of the world, been pretty nice. It's like fall. I don't know where the heck that came from, but it's fall. It's not going to last, you know, for like more than a week maybe, and then we'll be back at it. But it's a portend of things to come. My favorite time of year, just about here, maybe spring. But yeah, what a lovely week, and supposedly the weather's going to hold for about a week. That's some pretty exciting stuff, friends. So get out. This is a great time to get out and be out. Pardon me, if you're hearing my voice right now, I hate to kind of bring this stuff up. Battling a little bit of a cold came on out of nowhere yesterday, and it hit me like a ton of bricks. It's funny. It's probably karma. I was driving home Tuesday evening, listening to one of my favorite DJs on WWOZ, the great Neil, who Tuesday evenings does the Vintage R&B show. You should check it out, 90.7 there, WWOZ, good music. And Heartbeat of the City, really, as far as music goes here in New Orleans. And Neil mentioned at the top of his show that he has a cold. And I'm thinking, man, cold, I didn't know those were going around. And who gets a cold in the middle of September or beginning of September? Well, apparently I do. There's karma slapping me in the face. So bear with me on that one. Here's the good news is after this little segment here, the rest of the show we actually recorded on Tuesday. So I guess I'll get to that now. My voice sounds a lot better, and I was a much happier person at that time. But we start off right after the break here, coming up in just a little bit. We're going to be out at the New Orleans Museum of Art, otherwise affectionately known as NOMA. And they have it's a great museum. And they have a great event coming up called Love in the Garden on September 22nd outside. It's a benefit for the museum. It celebrates the 14th anniversary of the sculpture garden that they have there, which is an amazing place. And I bring this up because we talk quite a bit about the event. There's a cocktail competition. There's, of course, food. There's like a late night segment with bands and then late night food with food trucks for you younger folks out there. There you go. That's what they told me. And it's a really fun event. But we also talk a little bit at the top of the segment about NOMA in the museum itself. And I want to point out that, like, you know, hey, if you have never been there, you live here and you've not been to the museum, go check it out. And if you're listening somewhere in podcast land, which I appreciate as you always do, check out NOMA when you come to town. Make sure it is on your itinerary. It's NOMA.org, NOMA.org. We cover all that. Then after that, the rest of the show runs. We revisit one of our main topics that we've been covering here lately on the show. We talk about the restaurant business with Robert LeBlanc of LeBlanc Smith, and for the first time joining the show, Neil Bodenheimer from CureCo. They own the celebrated cocktail bar Cure, which has been open for about 8-9 years on Ferret Street uptown, and are also the proprietors of Caden Table, which I believe has been around for about 3 or 4 years now on Decatur in the French Quarter. Both these guys are great guys to talk to. If you've listened before, we've had Robert on with others, Chef Alex Harrell of Angeline, Sean Josephs of Kenton's, other those kind of the main guys. Very candid, very honest, talking about the restaurant business. We kind of emphasize independent sit-down establishments restaurants, bars, these sorts of things. We talk about the state of the industry in the city, but with a lot of the implications relate to really the rest of the country and actually in some instances really beyond. And these guys are very honest. Both have achieved a good deal of success. Both have also taken some significant lumps, and they are not afraid to talk about those either. This time around, it's the end of summer. We've been revisiting this topic about once every 5 or 6 weeks, and it's been a rough summer, friends. At least 15 restaurants closed in New Orleans. I think a couple more, you know, it may happen before we come back into high season here. We talk about a whole host of issues connected to that in a very frank and honest way. And one of the things I think is really neat is both Neil and Robert, if you're thinking about opening a restaurant, really anywhere, okay, and you're into this idea, or you're thinking about moving to New Orleans and opening a restaurant, or you're in New Orleans and you're thinking about opening your own spot, these guys will make themselves available and talk to you. The good, the bad, and the ugly. And I think that that's a really cool thing. So that's going to close out the show. It's a fascinating conversation. And even if you're just a food enthusiast and you want to understand the dynamics behind the places that you like to visit and we need to support them, check it out, check it out, check it out. It's a great conversation. Mentioning some stuff, friends, coming up. Speaking of restaurants, yes, Monday, friends, restaurant week here in New Orleans. We talked a lot in the month of August about Culinary Month, which goes on all month long. That was over 100 restaurants featured. I think we have about the same number, most of the same suspects, actually, participating in Restaurant Week. That runs from Monday, September 11th through Sunday, September 17th. And what you get, it's the same deal, basically, as Culinary was, where all the participating restaurants offer a special menu where it's at least a three-course dinner for no more than $39, I believe a two-course lunch if they offer lunch for no more than $20, and a three-course brunch at least, if they offer brunch, of course, for $39. Lots of people throw in Lagniappe. If you're not from here, that means extra, little bonus for you. And they throw in some Lagniappe for you. Somebody like include a drink, an extra course. Some people, you know, give you just sort of one choice through each of the courses. Some people give you a bunch of choices. It's very cool. It's a great way to support our local restaurants, which coming out of the summer, they want to see us. We need to be out there. It's also a great chance for you to get out and try some places maybe you haven't tried before. There's a lot of new guys. There's a lot of classic spots. Hey, you know, maybe you haven't been to any of the Dickie Brennan establishments for a long time, something like that. This is a good chance to go try some of the real classics, some of the longstanding restaurants in town, and see what they're all about still. I'll say that. So get out there and check that out. If you go to Culinary, which is Coolinary, NewOrleans.com. Again, Culinary.com, and then it's /Restaurant Week, but you'll see the logo right there and just click on that. Coming up this weekend, friends, at the U.S. Mint Fun Festival. It's the Downriver Festival, the fifth annual Downriver Festival. We got festivals all the time here, friends. This Saturday, September 9th, going on all day, taking place at the Mint. The theme is shrimp and snowballs this year. Very fitting here for the end of summer. There's going to be great music, Sun Pie and Louisiana Sunspots, Freddie Omar con su banda. So we're getting some like traditional New Orleans stuff. We're getting some Latin stuff, all kinds of things. There's lectures going on, people talking about the shrimp industry. There's good food. There's some panels. There's displays, all kinds of stuff like that. It starts, the band start at 11. I think the gates open, or they kick things off with a second line at 10:30 there at the Mint. Should be a lot of fun. If you go check it out, I believe it's free. Don't quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure maybe a small donation is being asked for. If that would be reasonable. Go check out downriverfestival.org. There you go. Check that out. Also, friends, if you are interested in the world of politics here in New Orleans and for mayor, this is probably something that would only happen in New Orleans. Maybe not, but pretty close. There is a forum, a mayoral candidate forum going on at the Carver Theater on Monday evening. And that, it's all about music and music policy. It goes from 6:30 to 8:30. It's open and free to attend. You can submit questions in writing. All of the major mayoral candidates will be there, and they are going to talk about the, you know, what's, you know, the music community, the future of music in New Orleans, our policy. Yeah, we depend on music in this town, not only for our cultural identity, which is huge and important, but, you know, economically as well. So this is serious business, friends, and what these mayoral candidates have to say about music policy in New Orleans, clubs, venues, industry, supporting artists, all of this kind of stuff is going to be discussed or open to be discussed. Let's hear what these people have to say. I have a feeling some of them aren't going to get it, and if they don't get it, we don't need them. All right, I'm not picking sides here or anything like that, but check that out. That's at the Carver Theater again, 6:30 to 8:30 this Monday. It is a forum, open forum, to discuss music policy with mayoral candidates. There'll be a panel discussion, some other things like that. Friends, wanted to also mention we've got some really cool stuff coming up. Wines of South Africa is going to be in town doing Wines of South Africa Week at the beginning of October. Excuse me, end of October, all the way through beginning of November. It'll be a week all the way through. There you go. There'll be all kinds of events. We're going to talk a lot more about that. The NOLA Drink Show is going to be really involved with all that stuff. We're very, very excited about it. But this Tuesday coming up, if you are in the industry, okay, so if you are bartender, sommelier, restaurant owner, bottle shop owner, retailer, these sorts of things. There is a meet and greet going on at Pearl Wine Company, 3700 Orleans Avenue in the American Can Building, 9 o'clock this Tuesday coming up on the 12th to come taste some wines. Goes from 9 to midnight. And then Jim Clark, who is the representative of WOSA, will be there. WOSA stands for Wines of South Africa. And we're going to talk about how you can get involved with the Wines of South Africa Week there at the beginning of October and beginning of November. So come check it out. Brainstorm with us. Think about some things that you might want to do at your establishment. They're going to publicize what you do, all this stuff. And then if you're in the public, stay tuned. Lots more coming on that Wines of South Africa Week. It'll be a lot of fun. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the show, and then we're going to be back at NOMA. Come on back.
Glass of wine. It's 8:45 and I still got a little more time.
Are you tired of drinking the same wines? Switch it up. Try the Kreutz Family Cellars wine. Kreutz Family Cellars is a small, family-owned winery in Sonoma County that makes wines from some of the most prized vineyards throughout Northern California. Each bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines has a magnolia on the label. The magnolia is a symbol of the family's southern roots and their way of life. True, honest, and fun. Look for the magnolia and pick up a bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines today.
Hi, New Orleans. It's Laura from Sobu, and I'm here with Chef Juan Carlos.
Sobu's got happier hour. It's 3 to 6 from 3 to 6.
It's bar bars, sips, and snacks, all for $3 to $6 from 3 to 6 p.m. every day.
Laura's got something to please everyone at the bar for happier hour, all for 3 to 6 here at Sobu.
And we know you'll want to try a smoky pulled pork taco or any of the other delicious snacks on our happier hour menu.
Sobu's happier hour, every day from 3 to 6, 310 Charter Street in the quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Locally inspired and nationally recognized, Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse serves USDA prime beef, Gulf seafood, and innovative Creole dishes. Come experience why Maxim Magazine and Playboy named it among the nation's top steakhouses. Running short on time? The full menu is available in the bar for quicker and more casual dining. Dickie Brennan's 5 After 5 Happy Hour Special is back. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter at 716 Iberville.
Now, if you ever been down to New Orleans, then you can understand just what I mean. Now, all through the week, it's quiet as a mouse, but on Saturday night, they go from house to house. You don't have to pay the usual admission.
If all right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with UWGSO 990 AM in New Orleans, or in podcast land, wherever you may be. Hey, thanks for tuning in today. I really appreciate it. As you know, if you're listening at the beginning of the show, we are here. We were actually here 2 days ago, so we'll let you do the math on what that actually means. But we are here at the New Orleans Museum of Art, and we're going to be talking about the Love in the Garden event, and we're chatting with Margot Crane, Communications and Marketing Manager, and we'll get to Kristen Jokum, who is the Donor Relations and Events Manager, in just a second. But we're chatting with Margot. Thank you for being here, Margot.
Yeah, thank you. I'm so excited.
Absolutely. Thanks. And thanks for having me here today. I appreciate it. Well, as I mentioned to y'all before we went on the air here, everybody in New Orleans is probably in the area that's listening on the radio, probably knows something about NOMA. Mm-hmm. But we have a lot of listeners who are not from the area. So can you tell us just a little bit about the museum, when it was started, where it is, what y'all do?
Absolutely. So New Orleans Museum of Art was founded in 1910 by Isaac Delgado. So we've been here in City Park since 1910. We are the oldest fine arts institution in New Orleans. And we have, our permanent collection encompasses over 40,000 works of art. So we really have a little bit of everything for everybody.
That's fantastic. So it does encompass a wide array of styles of art, correct, and genres?
Yes. So currently, for example, well, we just closed a show that featured some modern and contemporary art, featuring a lot of artists that are from New Orleans. We have a larger modern and contemporary art exhibition on our second floor that features some new acquisitions. We'll soon be featuring some pottery from the 19th century.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And we are also about to open on October 6th an exhibition called East of the Mississippi, which features 19th century American landscape photography, which is really special.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, okay. So really just anything for everybody. If you like art, you'll find something here that tickles your fancy.
Well, and tell people, so the museum is here in City Park.
Yes.
And can you tell people where it is a little bit more specifically than that, how they get here?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you're familiar with New Orleans, I guess you can get up. Well, right now there's a little bit of construction, but I would typically say get off this. Well,
and there always is, but there's some that's directly right. affecting getting here.
Right. the City Park Avenue exit and take City Park Avenue right up to the circle that is right outside of one of the main entrances to City Park. And we are right off of Collins DeBall Circle. Okay. Within the park. So if you're familiar with the city, you can imagine that. It's really kind of the main intersection of Carrollton and Esplanade Avenue. So right here in historic New Orleans City Park.
There you go. Just drive right up Esplanade. And if you keep going straight, you're going to drive in through the up the front steps and into the front door of the museum.
Once you enter that main entrance, you really can't miss it. There's a very grand institutional building that you'll see with columns and banners, and it's hard to miss.
Right. Cool. So the event that you all have coming up on the 22nd, you touched on this, it is to celebrate the 14th anniversary of the famed Sculpture Garden. Can you tell me just, that's a really neat spot outside. Can you tell me a little
yes.
bit about that?
The Sculpture Garden, it's the Sidney and Walda Bestoff Sculpture Garden. We broke ground, or I think it opened in 2003, and it's really such a treasure in New Orleans. I feel like the citizens of New Orleans are so lucky to have it. It's one of the most highly revered sculpture gardens in the world. And it's right here in City Park. We have now 64 sculptures in the garden. So, and really a range of styles. There's something for everybody. And what I like most about the Sculpture Garden is that it really emphasizes the natural landscape and the ecosystem. It kind of complements it. So when you're walking in, you feel like you are in nature. You don't feel like you're just being bombarded by 64 sculptures. So it's a really unique experience. And it's also free and open 7 days a week.
Yeah, it's great. It's a cool place. You can bring a picnic, right? And sit out there and cut and hang out in the garden.
You can sit and hang out there all day and take in the lagoons and see, you know, birds and swans swimming by and people kayaking. And you can definitely find a quiet corner and read a book. There's a lot to do. Definitely some shade in the summer when it's hot. Yeah.
Great. Thank you.
You're
awesome.
Welcome.
Margo, thank you. So what we're going to do is we're going to kick this microphone over here to Kristen Jochum, who, as I mentioned, is the Donor Relations and Events Manager. And thanks again, Margo. I appreciate it. And so let's talk a little bit. We've definitely got plenty of time here, Kristen. So tell us a little bit about the special event that's going to be taking place on the 22nd.
So Love in the Garden, which is presented by Whitney Bank, takes place on Friday, September 22nd. And it's one of our major fundraisers at NOMA. We feature over 60 local restaurants at the event. We have a cocktail competition that's presented by Sky Vodka, featuring 11 of the top bartenders in town. We have amazing music, BRW, which is a Motown band, Kinfolk Brass Band, and DJ Bryce Nice will end off the evening.
From WWOZ?
Yes. And we also honor four local artists, Anita Cook, Simon Gunning, Caroline Schley, and Bob Sneed.
So let's talk a little bit about that, because I think that's one of the important parts of the event is, yes, it's going to be a lot of good, and we'll get into the food and the
right.
cocktail thing. Probably we'll do that after the break here in a little bit.
Yeah.
But part of this is, of course, we are talking about an art museum. Part
yes.
of this is each year you honor a handful of local artists, correct?
Correct. About the last 8 years, we've honored various local artists who really contribute to the community and are revered locally. And this event is highlighting the visual arts and musical arts and, of course, culinary.
So it's not limited then to just visual artists then in this case. So it's really anybody in the artistic circles.
For this year, it is visual artists.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Gotcha. And so how do you go about, and we don't have to get too technical with this, but how do you all go about selecting these artists to be honored?
We have a nominating committee, and they meet with different museum curatorial staff who make kind of the final decision. And that's kind of the process.
Got it. And are these people, do they typically have their work here at the museum, or at least at some point, or do they after?
It depends. Not all the time, but in our special exhibition that just closed, the Arthur Roger exhibition, it featured Simon Gunning and Bob Sneed were featured in that exhibition. So Yes.
Great. So the event is September 22nd. And aside from featuring the artists that we were just talking about here, and some good music, which we've talked about, there's a lot of good food going on.
There is amazing food. We have over 60 of the top New Orleans restaurants. We have Galatoire's, Doris Metropolitan, Santa Fe, Satsuma, just to name a name a few.
There are a whole bunch, and I was reading through the list. It's an interesting cross-section of different restaurants that are going to be out here.
Yes.
So how does it, Kristen, work with the food then? Are people sort of set up in tables all around the grounds?
We have tables throughout the sculpture garden, and they served like 500 portions of a sample size. So you can walk from restaurant, from table to table, and sample some of the best cuisine that New Orleans offers.
Great. So that's all inclusive then with coming to the event.
And we also have late night fare cuisine featuring different food trucks. We have Nola Snowballs, the Red Stove food truck, Coco and Cream, Grita Tacos, and Morning Call.
So that's good. So that keeps the party rolling.
10 o'clock they'll come on. So 10 o'clock to midnight, you still have some yummy food that's all included in your ticket price.
That sounds great. Well, let's do this. Let's take a quick little break here, and then we're going to come back and we're going to talk a little bit more. The event also features, there's a competitive component to this.
Yes.
So we're going to talk about that. We're going to get into some of the cocktail stuff, and then, of course, we're going to get to the really important stuff, how you, friends, come to the event, which you should. So, friends, we're going to take a little break here on the show. Come on back.
French Market offers daily entertainment and delicious food and drink options throughout our six-block district. Whether you crave raw oysters or fresh produce, authentic confections or healthy daiquiris, you can find it here. Sit at one of our cafes and hear live local music. Enjoy a muffaletta, po' boy, salad, or cheese plate in the farmer's market. Check out our pop-up farmer's markets on Wednesdays and Saturdays for even more fresh food options. History is being made fresh daily at the French Market. Visit frenchmarket.org for food, drink, retail, and event listings.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Are you looking for a great place to enjoy great handcrafted and vintage cocktails? Victory is located at 339 Barone Street in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission? To preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. Give us a call to book your next private event or go to our website, victorynola.com. See you soon. Cheers.
Did you know that there's a vineyard and winery making quality table wines just 1 hour north of New Orleans? At Pontchartrain Vineyards, we produce award-winning wines from our 15-acre vineyard, as well as premium wine grapes sourced from the West Coast. Try our light, crisp, Louisiana-grown Blanc du Bois, or have a glass of Chardonnay, Zinfandel, or our Cab Syrah blend made right here in Louisiana. There's something for everyone at Pontchartrain Vineyards. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with Sazerac Rye Whiskey. It's football and festival season, and there's no better way to enjoy Sazerac Rye than in a pothole cocktail. Just fill up a glass with ice and your favorite root beer, and add 2 ounces of Sazerac Rye for a truly tasty toddy. Named after the city's most iconic of inconveniences, the pothole is proof that New Orleans never takes itself too seriously. Sazerac Rye Whiskey, the way New Orleans does whiskey.
Hello, this is Ron Bartholomew, and to my great city of New Orleans, I'd like to introduce to you Touch Vodka. This artisan handcrafted ultra-premium vodka is uniquely distilled from Florida's finest wildflower honey and American grain. Touch also produces key lime, Valencia orange, and ruby red grapefruit selections that are infused with natural oils of locally sourced fruit, which results in a unique 80-proof vodka with no sugar added or coloring. Touch is now available at Doranax, Cello's, and the Corporation Grill and Bar, and many other locations across Louisiana. This holiday season, sit back and relax and enjoy Touch Vodka.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. If you're listening to this show, you love good food and good wine. And a great wine with our plentiful fresh Gulf seafood is the Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc. a crisp, balanced white blend from the south of France. Whether it's with fresh oysters, crab, redfish, or shrimp, this Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc will not disappoint, and it's a great value at around $14. Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc. Cheers!
I am in New Orleans and in podcast land. Hey, thanks for listening. Wherever you are listening to the show, I appreciate it as always. Hey, we're here. It's Tuesday before the show, so if you're listening to the radio on Thursday, thank you. If you're listening to the podcast in some indeterminate time in the future, thank you. But we are here at the New Orleans Museum of Art. It is a privilege to be here. And I'm chatting with Kristen Jokum, who is the Donor Relations and Events Manager. And we're going to start, I'm going to throw you, well, since we were talking about curveballs during the break, I'm going to throw you a little bit of a curveball, Kristen, because you and I just met the other day out of complete happenstance.
Yes, we did.
And it was a funny story. We were at our good friend, who's a good supporter of the show, Sylvain Restaurant, and on Sunday, and you almost ordered yourself a grits cocktail.
That's right,
a cornbread and grits cocktail, or biscuit and grits. Yeah,
biscuit and grits cocktail. Luckily, that's not what they served me, but what they did serve me was yummy. But yes, it was a funny.
That was pretty funny. We had, it was a little loud in there, so there was a little miscommunication in regard to what you were pointing at and ordering. And anyway, so we're going to let that one go, Kristen. I just wanted to bring that up because
you
walked out to greet me here at the museum. And I'm like, I know you.
I was thrilled.
Well, great. So we're talking about the Love in the Garden event, which is coming up on the 22nd.
Yes.
What time is the event, actually?
The patron party begins at 7 p.m.
Okay. And how does that work?
Basically, it's the first hour of the party, 7 to 8 p.m., and tickets start at $125 for the patron party. And then the garden party starts at 8, and we have different music. At 8 o'clock, BRW will start playing in the back of the garden. And then our late night party begins at 9. So
are there three different tickets?
There's three different tiered tickets.
Okay.
So the garden party ticket for members is $75. For non-members, it's $100. That's the 8 p.m. The patron party ticket is $125 for members, $150 for non-members. And the late night ticket is a bargain. It's 9 p.m. to midnight, and it's a $50 ticket. So we've kind of geared that towards sort of a younger audience to attract them to the event.
That makes great sense. Well, since you mentioned it, Kristen, let's talk about the membership program, because that's a great way for people to, and not, again, we don't have to get too specific, but that's a great way for people to support the museum, right?
Yes, most definitely. And if you're interested in purchasing tickets, you can also join if you're not a member and get a discounted price.
So you can join and become a supporter of the museum right on the spot. And
of
then,
course,
okay,
yes.
Great.
Definitely. And we have different membership tiers at NOMA. There's an individual membership that starts at $65. There's a dual family membership that starts at $80, and it goes up from there.
And that's per year, correct?
And it's per year. And we have a lot of wonderful programming at NOMA every Friday night. There's music, a curatorial event, usually a movie or something that all members can come and enjoy that for free.
Oh, that's great. And and do you get free admission to the museum, too?
Yes, free admission all week long.
So that's great. So you can just wander in and check something out for an hour and,
exactly.
and then wander back out, which is a great thing. And it's a great museum. Well, so with the event, then, we talked a little bit about the food. You're going to have about 60 restaurants represented,
right.
plus the late night food truck stuff and things like that.
Correct.
But part of my interest here is we're talking about the cocktails. And let's talk about the cocktails in general. And then let's talk about the competition after that.
Right. So we have the Love Cocktail Challenge, which is presented by Sky Vodka. There are 11 different bartenders in the city, top bartenders that are participating in that. In addition to the cocktail challenge, we also have full bars throughout the event and a lot of featured cocktails, sky cocktails that will be served as well. But the actual challenge, it's a love themed cocktail challenge. So the bartenders, for instance, pulled like tequila and love hate. They're different themes. They're forbidden love, love hate, lust, unconditional love, and unrequited love.
Oh, so now everybody who's participating then had to draw a specific theme under the larger theme of love, and then that is what has to inspire their cocktail.
Yes.
Ah, great.
So
okay.
It's tequila, Espolòn tequila, Bulldog gin, Sky vodka, of course, Wild Turkey bourbon, and Appleton Estate rum.
Okay. And you've definitely got some really good bartenders. I know I was just skimming over the list a little bit ago, and
yes.
You have Paul Gustings from Two Jags there. I know you have Chris McMillan from Revel, Hattie Kateri from Sazerac Bar, and Megan over there from 12 Mile Limit, right?
Right,
and,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's, I mean, the top bartenders are so creative, and it's such a fun thing that evening, and they come up with their cocktail names, and they really get they're really excited about it, and it's a fun night, and we'll have a panelist of judges that will judge the best in show,
okay.
And then we'll have a people's choice, so each person who comes to the event will get a token of love, and will be able to vote for their favorite cocktail.
So, and I'm guessing how that's going to work then is people walk around, and then they go taste the cocktails,
yes.
And they drop it in a
correct.
Bowl or something at the table?
Yes.
Now, with tasting the cocktails, if you come to the event, is it sort of like the food? That's all inclusive? You can
everything,
wander around,
yes.
Taste everything?
Everything is included in your ticket price.
Now, do we know what the cocktails are going to be before? Do they submit them? Or is it a secret when they show up with their costumes and their whole display and everything that I know they will all do?
We really announced it that night.
Okay.
We actually had a pre-event about a month ago where the bartenders came and chose their spirit and their love variation theme. So right now they're working on their cocktails and putting that all together. We're waiting to find out what the names are and what the cocktail will be.
I will not spill any secrets, but I am tempted to go connect with a few of my friends that are listed there and say, what are you making?
I know. We're excited to find out.
Yeah. The best part is to get to taste, right? Which is going to be
right.
A lot of fun. How long have you all been doing that with is this the cocktail competition, a newish thing?
This time is the fourth year, the fourth annual cocktail competition. Bryant York, who's one of our young fellows, a member of our young fellows membership group, mm-hmm. Kind of put this concept together and has been sharing that ever since. And it's become a very important part of the event, and it's a lot of fun, and it just adds a whole nother dimension to it.
Brian's a good guy. I've known him for quite a while. So
yeah.
You've got a good guy in charge there helping you out.
Yes. And we have four amazing co-chairs that have been working very hard on this event. Olivia Caracella, Eleanor Davis, Glendy Forrester, Joanna G. Orlando, Kathleen Mix, and Carol Short.
Oh, great.
They've all been working very hard, along with a large committee, to put this together.
I bet. And it takes a lot of work to do an event like this. And actually, I think we probably should mention, I know you mentioned Sky Vodka is sponsoring the cocktail portion. Whitney Bank is your sponsor for the event, correct?
Yes, Whitney Bank is the presenting sponsor. This will be the second year, and they've just been a tremendous partner, and we're really lucky to have them on board.
Fantastic. Well, let's do this. Let's run down the hours again of the event, so people. I want to make sure that people are clear on the three-tiered ticket thing, so they show up, get the right ticket, and get what they want from the experience.
So the patron party ticket is 7 p.m. to midnight, and that starts at $125 for members, $150 for non-members. The next tier, garden party, 8 p.m. to midnight. Member price is $75. Non-member is $100. And then the late night ticket from 9 to midnight is $50.
Great. That's a great deal. Now, people can come to the website and buy tickets, correct?
Yes. noma.org to purchase tickets. They can call our office at 658-4121.
And am I going to guess it's correct to say that's a tax-deductible donation to the museum as well?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So obviously for a good cause that way. And,
yes,
and I do want to encourage people to think about supporting the museum as a patron.
Yes. And the funds raised for from Love in the Garden help support the exhibition and education programs at NOMA.
Okay. So thank you, because that's actually a question I meant to ask. It's not, we were talking about how it celebrates the anniversary of the sculpture garden, but it supports the efforts of the broader museum.
Yes. It's an annual event that supports the exhibition and education programs.
And it's fun. You're going to get good food. You're going to get good cocktails, good music, beautiful setting.
Oh, it's gorgeous. It's so beautiful at nighttime. It's a really special event.
And the weather should hopefully be cooperative for us.
Knock on wood.
Knock on wood, as we always do around here this time of year.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Kristen. Tell me the website one more time. It's just noma.org?
Noma.org. org.
Excellent. Yes. That's, of course, the New Orleans Museum of Art. Margo, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Kristen, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Friends, make sure you get out to the Love in the Garden event coming up here on September 22nd in the evening. Check out noma.org for more. I do encourage you to come visit the museum. It's a great place. Lots of great exhibits. Sculpture Garden outside, as we talked about. This is going to be a great event. If you've not been here, maybe a good way to get your feet wet with the museum and get involved. Become a patron and check it out. So friends, hey, we're going to take a little break here on the show, and we're going to be back with more. Come on back.
I'm going to take you out, girl, and spend some time.
Oregon wines are taking over New Orleans. The reason? They're delicious. Next time you're shopping for wine, grab a bottle of Sass Wine. Located in the South Salem Hills of Oregon's Willamette Valley, Sass Wine produces small amounts of handcrafted, high-quality wines that include Pinot Noir, Pinot Blanc, Pinot Gris, Chardonnay, Riesling, Sauvignon Blanc, and Rosé of Syrah. A perfect balance of full fruit with fine, supple tannins and firm acidity is what makes truly great wines, and you'll find that in every bottle of Sass Wine you drink.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region, producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood, or our bold, rich Petite Syrah, excellent with steak. To our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
Locally inspired and nationally recognized, Dickey Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter. Dickey Brennan Steakhouse serves USDA prime beef, Gulf seafood, and innovative Creole dishes. Come experience why Maxim Magazine and Playboy named it among the nation's top steakhouses. Running short on time? The full menu is available in the bar for quicker and more casual dining. Dickey Brennan's 5 After 5 Happy Hour Special is back. Dickey Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter at 716 Iberville.
Now if you ever been down to New Orleans, then you can understand just what I mean. Now all through the week it's quiet as a mouse, but on Saturday night they go from house to house. You don't have to pay the usual admission if you're a
all right, everybody, welcome back to the Noel Drinks Show. Brian Diaz here with you, WDSO 990 AM in New Orleans, podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks for tuning in today. As you know, if you're listening at the top of the show, we we just finished up over at the New Orleans Museum of Art, and now we are here at Cavern Restaurant, one of my favorite spots uptown, 3600 block, 3607 to be exact, Magazine Street, part of the LeBlanc Smith Restaurant Group, and Robert LeBlanc is here. Ro, how are you, buddy?
Good, man. How are you?
Absolutely, man. Thank you for hosting us. Thanks for being
on
today.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having us.
Absolutely, and like to welcome, for the first time on the show, Neil Bodenheimer from Cure Company, man. How are you doing, Neil?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me today.
Thanks, Neil, for coming on. I appreciate it. It's you and I met a little bit here and there a while back, and you guys have Cure on Ferret Street, uptown, and also Cane and Table on Decatur in the French Quarter.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Yes, sir.
I have my facts straight, which is rare. LeBlanc Smith Restaurant Group, where we are here at Cavern with Robert, is the family of restaurant Cavern, Sylvain, Mobar, and Barrel Proof. And if you guys listen to the show out there on a regular basis, one of the things that you know, Rose done this with me a few times, which I appreciate, we're just sort of talking about the state of the restaurant business, bit of an emphasis on independent sit-down establishments or just independent establishments.
Sure.
Here in town, and we kind of, what we did, Ro, leading up to this, we talked in the spring, we talked towards the outset of summer, and now here we are,
sure,
beginning toward the tail end of summer, and we've had at least 15 restaurants, if not more, close in New Orleans over the summer. It's been a tough one.
Yeah, I think it's been a worse summer, as I'm hearing it. This summer is worse than last summer, and last summer was the worst in a long, long time, mm-hmm, apparently. So we feel it. And thing about Neil, Neil's a close friend of mine and one of the peers, and this is a little bit of my own BS, but I did experience this a lot, is I think with a different generation of restaurateurs, and this is not a blanket statement because we've had some great mentors in the New Orleans restaurant community, but in general, it's a lot of false bravado. Everybody's packed every night. Everybody's killing it. Everybody's printing money. And you know, a lot of the conversations that Neil and I had around Cure and Sylvain when we were getting started, they were getting started, we're always very honest, and that's important. It's important to have that honesty, and I think that our peer group is really frank, and so I'll always, and I think Neil's the same exact way, be honest and kind of cut through the cloth. And so I do think it's important to let people know what's going on and not to sugarcoat things and to be frank and to be clear.
Absolutely. And I appreciate you guys being here to do that. And that's why we're doing this. And to you, Neil, one of the things we're talking about right before we started to record is one of the establishments that you had in the family was a Cafe Henri there that you opened in the Bywater, which unfortunately you guys shut down recently. And I said, you know, we want to make sure everybody's comfortable talking about what we're talking about. And I know you're being tongue in cheek. He said, no, I love to talk about it.
Well, no, I actually do. And, you know, I'm actually serious about it because I think that the Cafe Henri speaks to a lot of interesting things that are going on in town. I mean, I wish it was still open, you know, but it's, but we made the call because we knew that we had to make the call. And, you know, some of it was execution and some of it was neighborhood and some of it was timing and offering. And you put all these things together and you get pretty interesting conversation about what's going on in the city. I mean, I don't think you can talk about Cafe Henri without talking about the neighborhood of Bywater and mm-hmm. what's going on down there and what that means to the overall health of the city. I think as we all talk about the summer, you can't forget about Hollywood South and what's happened because Hollywood South, they used to shoot here over the summer.
Right. So folks, so you don't know what Neil's referring to is the film and TV industry and then the downsizing after some of the tax breaks went away and things like that, that a lot of money that was in town that would populate these restaurants is now not here.
Exactly. And I think that that's something now that we've seen a few years of this, I think we can see a tangible reduction. And I think that, I'm just one voice in this, but, you know, I look at the good at what these tax credits brought to communities like New Orleans and Shreveport and Baton Rouge. And it's pretty hard to replace that revenue. I think Bywater was particularly susceptible to this because it had a lot of short-term housing. A lot of that short-term housing turned into Airbnb. And I think what is pretty compelling neighborhood over there, I think it's going through a tough time because it doesn't have the resonance that it once did. I mean, I'm sure Robert can vouch for me on this. I mean, a lot of our staff lived in Bywater.
Well, you know, and because we've got some time here, let's unpack a few of these things. So when we're talking about the Bywater neighborhood in particular, and I think you touched on something really important, Neil, that, Ro, you said something here. Let's go to this point. We'll kind of use this maybe as a springboard. The way we are now, it seems, as the landscape is, as you said, is that, you got to have a lot of things go right. You have to have a good presentation out of the gate. You have to be in a good location, all of this sort of thing. And in the summertime, say in the Bywater, for example, you're dependent on residents to keep you going in a large way, right?
Yes.
But let's elaborate on what you said about, you know, needing things to go right. And then I think let's kind of talk about some of these dynamics like neighborhood, not going right.
Neil touched on a point talking about Cafe Henri. With every one of our restaurants, including Cabin, it's more like a technology company. You want to be as close to excellent as you can when you open, but you don't wait forever to be perfect, right? And so we always believe in getting open and you iterate, we have feedback loops from our guests and from our team members, and you get better and you improve as you go along. And so I can confidently say that Sylvain is a much better restaurant today than it was last year, and it was better last year than it was when we opened. And that's just the nature of how we have always approached things. I would say the same thing about all of our restaurants. And I don't know, Mobar is a real extreme example of that. I mean, I think Mobar is widely considered one of the better restaurants in the entire city now, if you hear critics talk about it. And we never would have gotten that chance had Mobar opened in 2016. We iterated Mobar to become the restaurant that it is, and I'm very proud of that. But I don't know that you get that chance anymore. And so the other thing is,
well, let me ask you this then, just real quick. So Mobar is located on Rampart Street, right across from Armstrong Park. So people know, on the edge of the quarter.
Correct.
But do you think then what you're saying is that the window to get things right is shorter than maybe it used to be? Is that
it is? And the other thing is
definitely.
Okay. Yeah, for sure. You don't get the attention span so short. And so, you know, the other thing that's fascinating about Mobar is it's averaged out as a 4.7. out of 5 stars on OpenTable, which is among the best, probably the top 10, 15 rankings. Mobar's traction and engagement from social media is as strong as any of the other restaurants, certainly stronger than Sylvain's, and we don't get the same traction at Mobar quite like we do at Sylvain, and it's just purely a locational thing. So we've kind of learned that's a pretty clean, easy comparison. Mobar's only 7 blocks from where Sylvain is, but it's 7 blocks in a less populated, less foot traffic, less
happenstance. You have to kind of know to go there, right?
Exactly. And it makes all the difference in the world. And so the other thing that I think is that you can't, everything's got to be right. So it's got to be your product. It's got to be the experience. It's got to be the reviews and your social media presence. And it's also got to be the location. Whereas I don't think that was necessarily the case anymore. I think MoFo is a great example of that. That was a great restaurant. Still is a great restaurant. Not the best location, but it opened in a time when you didn't have to have the best location.
So right there on City Park. And
amazing restaurant, right? And mm-hmm. But I don't know that he would have the luxury of being able to do that this time around, because location has become so much more important.
Well, and to that, Neil, to you then, with Cafe Henri, did you guys think going into the Bywater that you were going to have a longer window to be able to establish yourself and all of that?
Sure, and I think that we felt like the great thing about Bywater is that it was is that it had kind of its own culture, its own neighborhood on its own, and which would give you time for people to discover you over a few years. And, you know, just like Ro said, I think that's always the goal, is you get better every day. You open because you have to at some point, you gotta start trying to make money. And then you get better. And, you know, I mean, like in our case, we realized at Cafe Henri that we weren't providing the neighborhood with what the neighborhood needed. And so we had to actually go back and retool. And I actually feel like we got it right. And towards the end, I'm extremely proud of the work we did down there that we finished on.
And was that a change of menu, change of price points?
Change of menu, change of chef, change of price point, change of offering. I mean, we had to have something. Initially, we wanted it to be a basics kind of place, mm-hmm. where people from the neighborhood could go there once or twice a week. And everything was below $16. And then eventually we realized that we couldn't just survive on the neighborhood, and we had to retool to get people to drive across town to go there. And we had a lot more success doing that. But I mean, really, we knew the damage was already done. I mean, the location within the Bywater, we actually felt like was one of the strongest buildings in the Bywater. But the neighborhood was going through a hard period, and I think it will get its feet under it. But for us, we didn't have time to wait.
Gotcha. You guys, let's do this real quick. Can we take a quick break and then come back and carry on with the conversation?
Absolutely.
Friends, we're chatting with Robert LeBlanc of LeBlanc Smith Restaurant Group and Neil Bodenheimer of Cure Company, and we're talking about the restaurant business here in New Orleans. Come on back.
Drinking that wine is dead of light. When they get drunk, they want to fuss and fight. Open and hollering and talk all night. When they get drunk, they begin to...
Looking to shake things up or find the bartender in you? We mean literally. At the New Orleans Drink Lab, you'll do just that. We teach you the history and tradition of classic New Orleans cocktails. Then you get behind the bar and make them. Master classes are fun, interactive, and hands-on. Great for small groups and team building. Come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. You mix, muddle, and master the art of cocktail making. Visit us at 343 Barone Street. Or go to our website, drinklabnola.com.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region, producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood, or our bold, rich Petit Sirah, excellent with steak, to our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
With the season's beautiful weather, it's a perfect time to take a drive across Lake Pontchartrain and visit New Orleans' only local vineyard and winery, Pontchartrain Vineyards. Our tasting room is open Wednesday through Sunday from noon till 4, or by appointment. Come enjoy a flight of our wines in our classically styled French Provençal tasting room, or pack a picnic lunch and enjoy a bottle of wine on our patio overlooking the vineyard. While you're there, ask about our wine club. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. Want a great alternative to Over Oak Chardonnay? Try Yamhill Valley Vineyards Pinot Blanc, a wonderfully balanced white wine from the oldest family estate in McMinnville, Oregon, in the Willamette Valley. It's round and ripe like a Chardonnay, but without the heavy oak and sweetness of big commercial corporate Chardonnays. Yamhill Valley Vineyard Pinot Blanc.
a great value under $20. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
Thanks for tuning in. Yes, we are chatting here with Neil Bodenheimer of Cure Company and Robert LeBlanc of LeBlanc Smith Restaurant Group. We're here at Rose Spot Cavern, and just here during the break, Neil, you were talking a little bit about, you know, it's not just New Orleans that we're talking about here with the hospitality industry and these sort of short windows and maybe, I don't want to use the word saturation, but carry on with what you were saying or elaborate what you're saying.
I think saturation is a fair term.
Okay.
I mean, I think that New Orleans has a finite amount of residents, and those residents can support a finite amount of eating and drinking establishments.
Right.
Now, I think what changes is when you add in tourists and you add in film industry, when you add in visitors that come in and the city grows to a certain amount, then we need more infrastructure for that. And so I think we're going through some growing pains as a city that is becoming more seasonal than it was. And I think that that infrastructure now has to grow and shrink. And I mean, Robert and I have talked about this a little bit in the past few days.
Fascinating.
I mean, I think New Orleans is not alone. It may be, it's in a smaller group of cities that are seasonal, but I do believe that just about every major to medium restaurant market in the country is going through a moment of saturation. I mean, mm-hmm. you've got every.
Do you think that maybe what might be somewhat different here, or makes it New Orleans in a smaller group, is on a per capita consideration? We do have a lot of restaurants.
No doubt. No doubt. I mean, I think the same could be said for Charleston as well.
Right.
And I think that, you know, we talked about this a second ago, is, you know, does every town need, you know, five of every type of concept?
Right.
Or in some cases, one of a niche concept.
And redundancy, perhaps, of concepts like we were talking mm-hmm. about, where you have the same genre of restaurant in the same neighborhood.
Yep.
And piggybacking or copycatting that goes on. Also,
yeah, we've talked about that a lot. You and I have talked about it a lot.
Yeah,
in terms of just clone ideas, clone concepts.
Yeah,
it becomes problematic. To Neil's point about the film industry, I read a study that during peak season, which is typically late summer, because it's easier to get locations and it's less expensive to take down restaurants or bars or location sites as it is comparatively to convention season when things are at a premium because the demand's higher. So they're really active in New Orleans in late summer, early fall, and that's when we need. But it was on average 4,000 people per day. It was union positions, so they each had a $50 per diem. So
right.
4,000 people, so they eat on the catering trucks for breakfast and lunch, and then they take their per diem and they go to Cannon Table or Sylvain or Mobar or Cure and spend the $50 per diem at night. And it's 4,000 people, so that's enough to fill a lot.
And these are people, and these are people obviously we're talking about that are maybe not here permanently, but here, so they're more likely to venture to Mo Bar on Rampart or to where Cafe Henri
exactly.
was in the Bywater.
While that's they're here, they want to experience New Orleans. So they're not, you know, they're not just taking in a movie or watching Netflix at home. They're getting out experiencing New Orleans. It's also mm-hmm. great advocacy for New Orleans when they go back to Los Angeles or New York and talk up the New Orleans hospitality market, and specifically Cannon Table, Cure, Sylvain, those types of restaurants are things that really appeal to them. So we've also felt that for sure. It's a great point, and I think it's a very underrated point mm-hmm. that Neil makes.
That's a very good point.
And I also think there's another point that at least needs to be mentioned as we talk about summers. I mean, Hurricane Katrina changed the dynamics of the city, and the city once was more seasonal. And then post-Katrina, people were here, and they were rebuilding their houses and rebuilding their businesses. And in some cases, if people had vacation homes, they weren't going to them, or they were rebuilding them on the Gulf. And it, you know, now that we look at it, and we're 12 years later, a lot of that stuff is back in place. And it makes sense if you can get out of the city to get out of the city when it's 90% humidity.
Right. Now, one thing, too, I think you guys, and maybe, well, how you feel about this, is that with some of the change that has happened in the city then, do we get a situation where people, I mean, let me back up a little bit. One of the things, Ro, you and I have talked about is that during the summer months, we still have a higher number of tourists, I think maybe to your point, Neil, about post-Katrina. You know, New Orleans became very popular. It became a destination of interest. But I think when we go through the summer months, yes, we have more people here traditionally than what we would have, but we have a different type of traveler, correct? And it's more of a budget traveler, regional traveler.
Yeah. Now, look, I will say this about summers in New Orleans. I think a big part of the responsibility is on us as restaurateurs and hospitality entrepreneurs. I think it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy in that summer's slow, restaurant teams anticipate it being slow, and so it's a subpar experience when you go. My wife and I have experienced that several times this summer. You go to a restaurant and it's half full, or if that, and that would be okay if the music was upbeat and the staff was engaging and warm, but that's not what you get. You get people just downtrodden. And so it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. My wife and I will choose to go to restaurants less and just cook at home or do something a little bit more casual because the experience isn't great. And these are restaurants that we love, by the way, and we'll go in the fall. We'll be there. We'll be back in October because it's fun and everybody's upbeat and the staff's on fire. So I do think there's a degree of summers in New Orleans that we have to own as hospitality entrepreneurs, where it's our responsibility to make sure that our teams give the one-third of the people that are coming in, as would come in the busy season, they still chose our restaurant and they still chose us, and we are obligated to give them just as good of an experience as they would get if they came in October, November.
I think that's a great point.
Yeah, and real quick, I mean, you guys, to either one of you, Ro, we've touched on that the last time you were on. We kind of talked about that, about this is an opportunity where you get to spend perhaps more time with guests and engage on a deeper level. Your regulars that continue to come in and
absolutely,
we have more time with them. But I think that the interesting point that you made, and I'll throw this to you, Neil, that you just talked about basically there's a vicious cycle that then goes on where you as the patron, psych yourself out from going.
Right.
And yeah, do you have thoughts on that, Neil?
I mean, yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that it's hard to get up to go to your favorite restaurant when you know it's not going to feel right. Mm-hmm. It's not going to feel like you know it can feel. And I just think that it's nice. In some ways, it's nice, is you know, when you're on the consumer end, because you go to a restaurant, you can get into whatever restaurant you want to go to. I mean, that's great, right? Yeah. But you know, locally, I mean, you have so many friends that live in town that you might go out with on a weekend that are out of town. So maybe you stay in and you do a little more family time. And that's, I think, just think the nature of the summer here.
Right. Now, and did you want to add to that, Ro?
No, I think I think it's a good, it's a great observation.
Now, do you guys think that, as you mentioned then, Ro, we touched on this before, so we don't have to talk about it too much. So there's the responsibility of the restaurant group to leverage this time as best as you possibly can. One of the things that you mentioned last time that maybe we can get into a little further here is the need to prepare for the situation. And I, you know, for the season where you've got to have, you know, maybe this is a good time to tell your staff, make sure you're saving up for this time of year.
Sure.
This is when you take your 2-week vacation to go to Europe.
Sure.
Do that kind of thing. Make sure that you're prepared to deal with the situation. Do you guys think that because of, and we have talked about this too, but do you guys think that there's a naivety that has gone on where people are just not prepared to understand that dynamic? They open a new place, they don't have the capital to maintain this?
I think that's a big part of it. I spoke to one of the principals at one of the largest restaurant groups here in New Orleans, and they said that while oversaturation is certainly an issue, a real issue, he felt the bigger issue in New Orleans was undercapitalization. And in their experience, it takes them 3 years of carrying costs before the restaurant starts to return money to the investors and things like that. So basically, you have to be open for 36 months at least before you can start pulling money out of the restaurant that you put into it. And people don't anticipate those timelines. People open restaurants with a 6-month expectation or a 9-month expectation.
The
ones who feel really capitalized, really well capitalized, sort of 18 months. And I thought that was a very salient point, and I had not thought about it in that context. But that's a fascinating indicator. And yeah, so I do think it's a preparation thing. I'll tell you what we're experiencing a little bit, what I'm going through, and to be honest, we'll always be honest, is I don't know that, to me, the variance is the biggest issue, right? So Mobar specifically, really proud of Mobar.
In numbers of people.
Exactly. So we had a great spring at Mobar and did really well, knew that we had to save that, right? So we weren't pulling money out, we kept it in there. Literally all the good work that we did from January to May, all the profit, everything in that regard, went back into Mobar June, July, August, first half of September. So basically by the end of September, if we're lucky, we're sort of broken even on the year. October, November, and December will be solidly profitable, and they'll be okay. And this isn't the exact number, but just to throw a number out there to be safe, or let's say it's $60,000. It's not a negligible amount of money, and it's a solid living. It's a decent earning. It's not nothing to scoff at. But you're not getting $5,000 a month over the course of 12 months, which would make it somewhat manageable. You have to deal with all of the expectations with your team and staffing up to manage the run-up and staffing down and, you know, dealing with people's emotions when it goes from May, which is typically the busiest month of the year, to June, which is the second or third slowest month of the year automatically. And, you know, managing the emotional aspects of that and managing the payables and managing, we're pretty well-experienced company at this point with 10 or 12 years of dealing with these cycles. And it's still hard for our company. It's still hard to adjust. Neil mentioned in jest, you know, down at Cannon Table on a Monday or Tuesday, they have anxiety attacks because it's Monday or Tuesday and it's pretty slow. And I told them we have to have a circle of truth, kind of the text of truth, where whenever you're having paranoia about what you're doing wrong and your restaurant dining room is empty, just send a picture to a couple of us and we can send you right. the same exact picture. And so at least we know we're all...
You guys, let's do this. I'm sorry. Can we take a quick break
yeah.
here? Okay, you guys, we're going to take a little break here on the show. We're going to come right back. Come on back.
Hi, I'm Dickie Brennan, and I'd like to invite you to our new Black Duck Bar located on the second floor of Palace Cafe. Named after the Prohibition's infamous rum runner, the Black Duck features over 120 rums as well as an extensive tequila collection. In addition, acclaimed master French chef Rene Bajot heads up the small plates and charcuterie kitchen. Join us for happy hour Monday through Friday from 4 to 7 p.m. with half-price small plates, local draft beer, and tap wine.
Hey ladies, are you looking for wine to bring to your next girls' night out? Grab a bottle of Capitello Wines and enjoy the taste of fruit from Oregon's Willamette Valley. Capitello has a wide variety of wines to choose from. Sauvignon Blanc, Pinot Noir, dessert wine, and a Brut Sparkling that's a blend of Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. He'll even stop by next time he's in town. So grab the girls, have fun, and enjoy Capitello Wine. Cheers.
Are you looking for a great place to enjoy great handcrafted and vintage cocktails? Victory is located at 339 Barone Street in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission? To preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. Give us a call to book your next private event or go to our website, victorynola.com. See you soon. Cheers.
Every afternoon when I wake up, I say a little prayer and drink up.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Thanks for tuning in. Yes, we're sitting here chatting the restaurant business and independent operation business in the hospitality industry with Robert LeBlanc of LeBlanc Smith and Neil Bodenheimer of Cure Company. And always interesting sidebars as we do here on the show during the break. And both of you guys made the point that we're talking about Cure specifically, which is a very well-established place, Neil, uptown, and Ro, we're talking about Sylvain in the quarter. Given, I think, two key points, and Neil, you take this first if you would. One is that ignorance is bliss, perhaps. I'm paraphrasing, and I'll let you elaborate on that. And then two, that in this the current landscape that we are in now, a lot of what you guys did to get those first places open, you couldn't do now.
No, I mean, I don't think so. And we were just talking about how these places were bootstrapped. Mm-hmm. And I mean, at Cure, and to give you guys an example, we were way over budget. I mean, we were $40,000 over budget in build out, no operating capital to go in, and had to borrow an extra $25,000, tell our subs that we would pay them little by little, which we did, and we paid them within the first 2 weeks we were open. I put up my personal bar and sold it in the opening days, and that was really helpful.
And painful, I'd imagine.
And no, it was great. It was great to get rid of all that stuff. And I mean, we didn't have a menu in the early days. It was just all people would come in and you just make them whatever, you know, whatever you wanted to. And I mean, there was no back bar at Cure. It was just a row of bottles. And I mean, if you open like that today, people would be like, what is this place? And, you know, we were lucky to be at the right place in the right time. And just like Robert was talking about, it's Sylvain. I think sometimes if you knew exactly what you were getting into, yeah, you would go jump off a bridge, you know?
No doubt.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I remember Cure vividly. Neil and I were peers and friends at that time. And, you know, people remember Cure as a phenomenon, and it is a phenomenon. But you, and it's put New Orleans on the international map. They were the first ones to kind of really get us taken seriously in this new movement of cocktail culture. And but that didn't happen overnight. It didn't happen in the first year, really. It was well received by locals and friends and people who wanted to see them do well. And the product was great and the experience was great, but it didn't really get all of this press recognition and accolades for a couple of years. I mean, there was pieces about it, it's sort of the quality of the work became this amazing thing.
You're running in circles of New York City and San Francisco and these places, right, that
correct.
Were well established on that.
Correct.
Front.
And I'm not sure that we get the same runway today that we right. got back then. I mean, Sylvain was very similar.
And we just talked about that. I mean, like Sylvain and Cure, I mean, I wouldn't say that we were decent at least for a year. And it's just like what you were talking about. It takes a long time to get a restaurant right. And you know, today's environment it's not forgiving enough.
Right.
And that's a great, and this is, I think, one of the good themes of the show here. I mean, if you will, good, is that this is what we're talking about, is that, you know, now Sylvain, for example, we're mentioning that, and Cure, we're mentioning that with you guys. And Cane & Table, I think mm-hmm. I would argue with you guys too at Cure Co. Is that it is on that map. And we were talking about some of these places where, like in the early days of Sylvain, as I said during the break, I would go when you guys first opened, going back several years. And, you know, people that were in there, especially in the summertime, they were locals, always, because like, you could just assume that. And now people come in certain places, the time that it takes to establish for people to know about you before they come here to visit
right.
and put you on their itinerary, that's critical in this town.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, it's critical. And look, that's not unique to restaurants, and it's not unique to restaurants in New Orleans. I mean, it's most businesses, right? And I think to some degree what happened is we all got a little bit lucky with the timing. And I think that the hospitality industry across the country got a little bit lucky, and it was kind of this perfect confluence of celebrity chef-driven culture where cocktails started to be taken seriously as well. And so you had this thing where it was kind of a hobby, and then it became a profession. And if you were sort of in at the right time on that, it was one thing. Maybe it took a year to kind of get stable and get going. And
lends
and
itself to the type of media and media consumption, I think,
exactly,
that we have now.
Exactly.
Like a
but
pretty
now
picture of a pretty cocktail.
I think it's gone so far that, you know, particularly with new media, Twitter, Facebook, things, Eater changes so much that, you know, somebody said something pretty accurately, with the exception of themed dinners. Eater talks about you when you open and then for about 3 months and then when you close.
Right.
If you do a specialty dinner, if you do some sort of themed event or a fundraiser, they'll mention it, and that's great. And I'm not bagging on Eater. They're reflecting what the consumers want to read, right? So that's not an Eater situation, but that makes it really challenging. It makes it tough. And all the channels that were available, social media, you can spend 45 minutes Googling around different articles and become pretty proficient on social media pretty quickly. So all these things that were differentiators are no longer differentiators. So and look, this is not us whining. It's not unique to our industry. This is every industry, and it happens. But we've all got to innovate, and we've got to apply best practices, and we have to start being really honest about what it takes. And it's not, you know, we got by on ambition and optimism for a long time. That's not really cutting it anymore. And unfortunately, a lot of really good people are kind of getting gassed.
Yeah,
we could survive St. Marie's closing. These guys can survive Café Henri's closing because we had Sylvain, we had Captiville. These guys have great places in Cure and Cane & Table that are successful. So then it's just kind of a strategic decision.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a life-changing decision.
It's not and, like that for everybody.
Yeah.
Right, and you could rob Peter to pay Paul for a little
exactly.
while, right? With the, and now, with the idea, too, I think with the understanding of the, let's touch on this for a second, you guys, with the media thing and the way media is consumed. And I mean, Ro, you know this, and I'll say this to you, Neil, is that, you know, we don't do listicles on this show.
Right.
And that's
right.
not my thing. And then heat maps and all that. I you know, I'm a firm believer in, like, Neil, when I come to your place at Cane & Table or Cure, and consistently over the years, I know I get a good cocktail. That's story worthy
so.
Of me, man. You do. And I mean, and it's true. But how do we manage? I mean, we talk about capitalization. We've talked about that a little bit. We've talked about, and I want to come back to staffing shortly. How do we manage the media consideration and the consumption and the messaging? That's a challenge, I think. Do you guys have any thoughts on that?
I mean, I actually want to listen to Robert's thoughts, and then I've got a few thoughts.
Okay.
So I think that the media, first of all, I think they're very well-intentioned, and I think they mean well. And I also think they're a reflection of what people want to read. And sure. So we talk about these listicles, and we all like to kind of make fun of those, but the reason why there's so many lists is because people are looking at so many lists. And that's very easy to track now, right, mm-hmm. With where people are spending their time. I think what we've learned, what's an interesting dichotomy, is I don't know that you can necessarily follow mainstream or traditional media anymore as an indication of what's working or what's not working. And this is strange, but I've talked to a lot of people, and look, to some degree, we're sort of a part of that, Mobar specifically, right? Mobar gets mentioned a lot on a lot of the best of lists, so it's and Mobar does fine, but Mobar is not packed wall to wall, two or three turns a night, it's five, six nights a week, does well, and I'm proud of those guys, and that's not a reflection at all on the work that our Mobar team is doing. But if you looked at the media and social media, it looks like Mobar's doing really, really well. Mm-hmm. Gangbusters. And we do okay, but it's not gangbusters. And so there's a difference between what's actually going on and what you perceive is going on based on how you view social media and traditional media. And I think that what becomes more important and more prevalent is the one-to-one relationships and communication with the guests that are coming in, the potential guests that are coming in. And what we are learning, I think Kavin's a pretty good example of that. Kavin's actually had a pretty good summer. And Kavin is more of a guerrilla marketing approach to things. We had a few chef changes. So, Kavin, people don't really know what to think from the traditional media standpoint about Kavin. But Kavin is really strong, knowing exactly who our guests are, knowing what they enjoy, knowing what they expect from us, and knowing that they can iterate with us. They can teach us how to be better, and we listen to that. And that's worked out really well. And Kavin missed most of the best of lists in 2016, if not all of them. But Kavin's doing pretty well because we took sort of an old school approach. So I think the media is essential, but I don't think you can rely on it anymore to be a marker of whether you're going to succeed or not.
And you've got to interpret it for what it is, right?
Exactly.
Well, do me a favor, Neil, can you hold your thoughts? Because yep. I want to take a quick break here and come back, and then we're going to jump right back in here and talk. I want to get your take on that, too. You guys, we're chatting with Neil and Robert, talking about the restaurant and independent sit-down establishment hospitality business here in New Orleans. Come on back.
That's the sweet touch of love.
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with New Orleans' own Sazerac Company, makers of Sazerac Rye Whiskey. In case you haven't noticed, rye whiskey is hot, flying off store shelves and dominating the bar scene in New Orleans and around the country. Rye's spicy and assertive character is drawing in those looking for whiskey with a bite, but that equally pairs well with cocktails. Enjoy it in cocktails like the Old Fashioned or Manhattan, or simply savor it on the rocks. Sazerac Rye Whiskey. The way New Orleans does whiskey.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region, producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood, or our bold, rich Petit Sirah, excellent with steak, to our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
Hi, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy, suggesting that great handcrafted Pinot Noir from Oregon doesn't need to be expensive. Consider Yamhill Valley Vineyard Estate Pinot Noir from the oldest family estate in the Willamette Valley of Oregon. It's rich, ripe, wonderfully balanced, and it's only about $20 at your favorite New Orleans wine shop. Yamhill Valley Vineyard. Top quality doesn't need to be expensive if you know what to drink. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers!
The French Market is a place where history is made fresh daily. From the historic Upper Pontalba building on Jackson Square to the ever-evolving Farmers Market, our six-block district celebrates New Orleans food, music, and culture through events, festivals, walking tours, health and fitness classes, and also children's workshops at the New Orleans Jazz Park. Visit our calendar of events at www.frenchmarket.org. The French Market, making history fun since 1791.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter.
Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Did you know that there's a vineyard and winery making quality table wines just 1 hour north of New Orleans? At Pontchartrain Vineyards, we produce award-winning wines from our 15-acre vineyard, as well as premium wine grapes sourced from the West Coast. Try our light, crisp, Louisiana-grown Blanc du Bois, or have a glass of Chardonnay, Zinfandel, or our Cab Syrah blend made right here in Louisiana. There's something for everyone at Pontchartrain Vineyards. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Savory crabmeat cheesecake and decadent white chocolate bread pudding are Palace Cafe originals. For nearly 26 years, Palace Cafe has been serving award-winning cuisine in the historic Warline Music Building. Located on Canal Street at the edge of the French Quarter, Palace Cafe is open 7 days a week for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and open for jazz brunch on the weekends. Make sure to try one of their refined classic cocktails or a glass of wine from their nationally recognized wine list. Palace Cafe is located at 605 Canal Street.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Yeah, we had a little respite there. Ro, thanks for the food, man. We had some happy hour food.
No, man, it was good.
Yeah, it was great.
No, thank you guys. It's fun.
Awesome, awesome. I
thank you guys for helping me eat it. I was just going to eat it all by myself, but thank God you guys were in here.
That's why the plates all ended up in front of you, and Neil and I just looked at each other. Okay, yeah. Oh, delicious stuff. Thank you, and great food here at Kevin, and the hospitality is wonderful.
No worries. Thank you guys. Yeah. It was fun.
Because before we went to the break, we were talking a little bit, and I want to close back in on this point. We were talking about media and managing, I think, the interpretation of we're talking about. So maybe you get 500 likes on your Instagram account, or you get a pretty picture of a cocktail, and it does really well. Managing the interpretation and understanding of media with listicles, with social media, 500 likes doesn't mean 500 guests.
Sure, yeah, and being included on a list doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be packed every night either. And so
it's true.
While it's always nice, it's a nice bump, and that gives you content that you need to push through social media, it's not the end all be all. It's less of a predictor of success today than it ever was.
I think it's good for your staff's morale, and that's probably the best part of it.
No doubt.
That's a good point, Neil. Interesting.
But to get it, and love to hear Neil's opinion on this, but what we've learned with Kevin specifically, if you want to get business, you've got to go about it the old school way and earn it. And kind of person to person and pounding the pavement and introducing yourself, inviting people in. When people come in, thank them, get to know who they are and invite them back in, get to know what they like and what they want, listen to them. It's sort of a scary time because it requires more work, but that's work. That doesn't really cost money. You don't have to spend a lot of money to do those things. You just have to care about doing those things. And if you do that, you can build a really solid business. You can build a really solid foundation upon which you can build everything. And
patting backs and kissing babies, right?
I mean, absolutely.
This is what we're talking about.
Yeah, sort
of. Well, sorry, Neil, I know you wanted to say some stuff on the media and then also talk about that Ro's point just there.
Well, I mean, I think Ro's point ties into to what I wanted to say, and that's that I really do believe that people are kind of overwhelmed by media at this point. I mean, there's so much more media to consume, and the way that we do it is so different today than it was even 10 years ago, between Twitter and Instagram and Snapchat, and Facebook is so much more robust, and I mean, how many more, I can just in the world of drinks, how many more websites and writers and food writers, and it's a huge amount of information.
It ranges from the amateur to the pro, right? I mean, with the pro person, you had, say, somebody will just pick something from the wine world, you know, you would have Robert Parker and he'd give you a score and everybody, that was the gospel. Now it's like, you know, somebody who's a stay-at-home mom or dad is writing a wine blog.
Yeah,
and where is the truth, or where is reality, and how do you synthesize?
I don't think it's obviously, you know, the way that we consume information and finding truth in this world is not just a restaurant problem. It's a massive problem that we deal with every day.
I'm not qualified to talk about that on this show, Neil.
But it's, I think what happens when people become overwhelmed with options is that all those options fade away to nothing. And I think Robert is 100% right. I mean, we really have to get back to what is that old school way of running restaurants and bars, which is, you know, person to person, one plate at a time, one guest at a time, one meal at a time. And that's the only thing that you can really affect today. And that's not to say that a great social media campaign can't do some stuff for you. It's not to say that getting on a list doesn't make a bump in some ways, some way, shape, or form. But ultimately, it's about guest satisfaction. It's about word of mouth. It's about getting out there and doing what people have been doing for, you know, a few hundred years.
Right. There you go. How do you guys, we were going to move into this topic here, talking about staffing, because I think this does relate to your point, Neil, is that you need your staff to then be, you can't just do it all by yourself as the restaurant owner. You need your staff to be that ambassador, right? So training your staff to do that, making sure they're prepared, qualified, dialed in to do that, I think is really important. And if we can go there, the one point I did want to make too is we're talking about Robert, getting out there and you know, kissing babies and slapping backs. You're creating brand ambassadors with your customers, which I think is a huge part of this. But if we can take the staffing part first, how do you guys do that? I mean, how do you take on that challenge to make sure, you know, you made this point, you have to give some license for the staff to say what they're going to say. How do you keep them on target with the message? Either of you guys, or, yeah.
Go ahead.
We talk to the staff always in terms of sort of teaching them how to run their own companies. That's one of our biggest things. It's one of our biggest development points. And so the idea is, this is important for your time at Cavin, but it's really, really important for you and just learning experience how to be a part of an organization or to build something or anything. The other thing is you talk about why you do things. So you teach why, so people understand why. So we're not constantly talking in the context of just do this, just do that. It's always like, we do this way because. And so you create a culture of sort of belief and understanding. And then the other thing is you talk about the values that you stand for very openly and honestly, frequently. And what happens is you people that don't necessarily align with those values will sort of wean themselves off, and people who do will sort of gravitate toward the organization. And then you have a group that's sort of custom built to represent what you stand for. And so then the next part of that is empowering them and letting them know that this is their canvas, and they're free to paint on it with whatever color they choose, their own color specifically. And then you give them stories, pieces of the idea of the restaurant, where it came from, where this dish came from, what this wine stands for, and how it ties in. And so when you give people little bits of content and they can share that content, it makes it a really honest, really authentic sharing of information that they find interesting.
It's so they put their spin on that. They have that story, how they tell the story.
Exactly. And the same thing goes for the guests. To the degree that you can, you let the guests know exactly what you stand for, and you share those same stories with your guests. And so people know that Cavin was named for my great-great-grandfather, who was an orphan in County Cavan, Ireland. People understand these types of things, and it gives them something they can own. And it gives them different aspects to which they can relate. And so it makes them feel more at home. And so that's literally how we do it. And it might sound like I'm oversimplifying it, but I'm not at all. That's exactly what we do.
That makes sense. Yeah, and Neil, do you want to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to, your team is the tip of the spear. I mean, they're the ones that are doing the work. I mean, I'm not, unless things go horribly wrong, I'm not washing dishes. I'm not polishing glasses. I'm not really making the drinks anymore. And honestly, I'm not at Cure or Cane and Table every night anymore, because their job is to go and to be with our guests, and it's not my show, it's not about me, it's bigger than me, it's about Cure, it's about Cane and Table and what the entities are and what they're gonna do for our guests when they come in the door.
Mm-hmm. Neil touched on something. That was the biggest transition point for me, and probably the most important lesson that I have learned that I feel like so many of our peers have yet to learn but would benefit from is, you know, when you sort of look at the old school way of doing things, it's like you gotta be there every night, and that's such a one-dimensional way of looking at things. And the reality of it is you're actually preventing people from feeling empowered by being there. And when everybody's looking to you to create the experience, or they're looking to you to answer questions, you're taking people's empowerment away. And it's the worst thing that you can do for your organization. Absolutely. Look, I'm not saying let's live in Aspen, let's check in 1 week a year and we're there, right? So you have to know what's going on. You have to be a part of it and have your hands on the pulse of it at all times. But your job is not necessarily to be there and taking ownership of every decision and every experience. It's to inspire and empower your very talented team to do those things. And that's a hard thing.
100% right.
And it's an industry driven by work ethic too, right? And so you want to prove that you can outwork people. You want to prove that you're able to work hard. But that's not really what it takes. It takes working smart. It takes teaching and inspiring.
And it takes working on your business too. I mean, this is, you know, a lot of us get in this business because we're good at it. You know, we're good at one thing or good at another. And somewhere along the way, it goes from being a talent or a skill into a business. And somebody's got to mind the business. Someone's got to make sure that we can pay the rent, that we can pay our overhead, that we can stay afloat. I mean, you have massive responsibility when you hire people to try and keep them employed. I mean, that was one of my biggest failures at Cafe Henri, is that I really felt like that was where I really failed, is that there were people that we'd employed and that we couldn't keep them employed.
Mm-hmm. You guys, let's do this. I'm going to take a break. We got time for one more segment. You guys stick around for sure, a few more minutes. Okay, great. Friends, we're chatting here with Neil Bodenheimer of Pure Company and Robert LeBlanc of LeBlanc Smith Restaurant Group. And hey, we're going to talk a little bit more and close out the show. Come on back.
Looking for a bottle of wine to impress your friends and family? Miro Cellars from California's Russian River Valley is the perfect wine for any occasion. Miro Cellars searches the region for the finest grapes to make their one-of-a-kind specialty wines. Award-winning winemaker Miro Chelikov considers the particular geology and seasonal climate of each vineyard when selecting the most interesting grapes the region has to offer. Because Miro has complete freedom to make precisely the wines he loves best, the results are spectacular. Let yourself in on one of the best-kept secrets in wine today, Miro Cellars.
Time for lunch? We've got you covered at Sobu.
Chef Juan Carlos whipped up special two-course lunches that start at $14.
Try our Creole Cuban sandwich and pair it with a bowl of our gumbo.
Of course, Sobu's full menu is also available.
And don't forget Sobu's version of Commander's Palace 25-cent martinis.
Available Monday through Friday, 11:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m.
Join us at Sobu for our speedy lunch at 310 Charter Street in the Quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Sobu, life is meant to be lived, not endured.
Hi, I'm Dickie Brennan, and I'd like to invite you to our new Black Duck Bar located on the second floor of Palace Cafe. Named after the Prohibition's infamous rum runner, the Black Duck features over 120 rums as well as an extensive tequila collection. In addition, acclaimed master French chef Rene Bageau heads up the Small Plates and Charcuterie Kitchen. Join us for happy hour Monday through Friday from 4 to 7 p.m. with half-price small plates, local draft beer, and tap wine.
My grandma and your grandma were sitting by the fire. My grandma told your grandma, I'm gonna set your flag on fire. You're talking about henna, henna, henna. Aiko, aiko, ande.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks for tuning in today, folks. Pleased to be joined again or chatting here with my friends Neil Bodenheimer of Cure Company and Robert LeBlanc of LeBlanc Smith Restaurant. Has been a very insightful, honest, and candid conversation, as it always is, talking about the restaurant business, guys. So let me thank you now. I appreciate your candor. And, you know, we didn't sit here and just talk about pretty Instagram cocktail pictures and how good my last one was.
No, thank you, man.
Thank you for having us and letting us talk about, you know, about real restaurant stuff.
I appreciate that. One of the things you guys, thank you, Neil, and that is important here, something you just said, Ro, you guys are both accessible guys, Ro, as you said. And so we were talking about the idea that, you know, as you said, Neil, a rising tide raises all boats. And being accessible, so I guess what I'm saying out here to people, if you're listening, if you're thinking about getting in the restaurant business or doing some of these things, or maybe you are, talk to these guys. They're going to be honest with you, because helping your neighbor, actually, we all come out looking better.
Absolutely. And it's in our DNA. It's in our nature. And we've both got a lot of help. And look, we've helped each other a lot. I've gotten a lot of advice and feedback and support. And, you know, a lot of times nobody believed, but Neil believed, and that helps, you know. Yeah, I would absolutely encourage anybody, if we can help answer questions. We've got a lot of help.
Yeah, I mean, you can always get to us through Facebook or Instagram. I mean, it's in today's world, you can get to anybody at any time you want.
Yeah, absolutely. And anybody out there too, if you don't know, and we'll come back to where you can find these guys online and also find them on the street, not literally hanging out in the street, but like where their establishments are. But you can also, you know, connect with us here on the NOLA Drinks Facebook page, and I'll point everybody in the right direction as well. Not a problem. You guys, so I wanted to talk about what we just, let's touch on this very briefly. We talked a little bit about, and I don't want to go too far down this road, staffing, and you talked about empowering staffing. One of the things that, Ro, you said earlier, preparing your staff for these slower months, the psychological aspect of managing staff through the ebb and flow of a year is a difficult thing, I think.
Yeah, I mean, yes, that's what makes it so difficult. That's where it's like, oh, man, this is hard work, and you're in uncharted waters, and you're dealing with people who you care about. These are all small companies. We know everybody that works with us intimately, and so you feel for people. But one thing that we get the benefit of the doubt on is we're always honest with everybody, and we sort of teach them how things work in the good times and the bad times. And so what we find works really well is we just let them know honestly what happened last year, what happened the year before that, how we feel about it. One thing that we do in particular at LeBlanc Smith is we really amp up the experiential training. So we'll set up tastings at distilleries. We will visit farms to some degree. We'll do events with the entire company. We'll do a 4th of July party. So we'll do some things experientially to let them know that they're a part of something. Everybody's kind of going through this together. But it keeps people active and paying attention to progress and keeps them kind of charged up in otherwise pretty slow times. Mm-hmm. But the only way to handle anything in life is just to be honest about it and to let people know that you're aware and you care. Mm-hmm. And that's how we do it. And yeah, we encourage people to take as many vacations as they want.
This is the time to save up your money and go on vacation.
And I think Robert makes a great point because, you know, over time, you know, you start off, I mean, I really felt like I had to kind of shield my staff from what was going on financially in a company. And the more I learn about open book management, the more interested I am in letting people know about, you know, the ups and downs and, you know, are we making money? Are we not making money? You know, there, this idea of truth in business. And I am much, much more into that today than I think I was even a year ago.
You get people that are invested, right? And so if they stick with you, they're invested in what you're trying to accomplish.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah. I mean, it's like, I mean, everybody's adults here. You don't have to treat them like they're children. Like, they don't know what's going on.
Right. And that's a good point, too. People are going to actually see it. Proof's in the pudding.
For sure. And I think people appreciate it. And, you know, one of the things, it's Neil and I's responsibility to develop the next generation of restaurateurs, bar owners, right? And so you're doing them a disservice if you're not telling them the whole truth. And that's the truth when things are going really well and things are very profitable, but it's also the truth when things aren't going as well. It's the truth as it relates to how much things cost. And you need to prepare people for those conversations and those realities, because I do feel like there's a couple times where I didn't do the best job preparing people for those things, and they've gone off to do their own things, and hasn't necessarily always been as easy as it maybe seemed at certain points. And that's a tremendous disservice to people.
Do you think you guys, when you handle it that way, when you handle more of an open book, open management consideration, like you said, Neil, that then maybe what you're actually doing is empowering people in a little bit too? They help you find, they're more, they know the truth, so they're maybe more vested in helping you find a solution, maybe offering suggestions, maybe doing something differently.
I think that's the goal, right? Is that you want people to be invested in what you're doing. You want people to be engaged in what you're doing. But it's not about, you know, I say what you're doing, what we're doing, mm-hmm. right? Because it's not just about my income, it's about their income, it's about our guests, it's not about my guests or their guests, it's about everybody coming together and working as a team. And that is really the, you know, the nuts and bolts of what we do. It's, you know, it's subverting ego and kind of exalting the team.
Right. And so you get that vested nature. People are trying to contribute in ways that actually maybe make
Absolutely.
A difference as
Absolutely.
Opposed to punching a clock.
And one of the things we used to experience pretty loudly, and we still get it every once in a while with newer hires, is, you know, everybody was lockstep during the good times, right? They're doing really well. They're making a lot of money. We're doing really well. We're making a lot of money in their minds. And then when things are bad, there's a separation between ownership and team, right? So it's like we're taking a bath as staff. We're not making nearly as much money as we once did. And you guys are, we don't, you know, and it's just sort of separation. Since being really open and transparent with everything, they truly understand that while they suffer, while they're making less money, we're literally losing money. And that's helped a lot in the summertime in terms of managing morale and expectations, and it kind of keeps that idea of we're all one team, we're all working toward one goal.
Right, and right. That's to everyone's benefit. Right.
For sure. And look, we're very clear, it's not their responsibility that we're losing money, and it's not their fault. They didn't do anything wrong. You're honest about that too, right? So you don't let them see that you think the sky is falling. It's not. It's summer months, and that's just part of the deal, and that's the responsibility that you signed up for in terms of ownership. But it does indicate to them what it really takes.
And that's always the worry about open book management, is that if you don't want people to go on the same emotional roller coaster that we go on as owners, is that I mean, I need a shrink to tell me what, you know, like, you know, some weeks I'm riding high and some weeks I got my head held, you know, my head held low, and I'm just, you don't want your staff to feel that either. So there is this push and pull between being transparent, but also making sure that people aren't, you know, feeling the same way. Well, am I going to have a job tomorrow?
Being a leader.
When it's just like, just a slow week.
Yeah, absolutely. And being a leader. And I think that really matters. Well, you guys, you know, and obviously we can go down these roads a little further. We got about 2 minutes left, and I want to make sure that we end on a high note here. You guys are both doing a couple things to aid in Hurricane Harvey relief. You guys,
yes, sir.
What are you doing, Neil, real quick?
So we teamed up with Pablo Johnson to do a Red Beans for the Red Cross fundraiser this past Saturday. Really big success. I think we planned it in 3 days, and we raised about $2,000.
Nice.
on a Labor Day weekend, so that was pretty good. We're gonna try and do them once a month. It won't always go to the Red Cross. We'll try and find some other charities to go to. But you know, I might go take a trip to Jackson and go raise some money up there, and just trying to put Harvey on people's minds. We know in Louisiana that this is not a 1 week, a 1 month.
This is the hard part.
Yeah, this isn't a news cycle. Yeah. You know, this is years of stuff. So
absolutely,
we're gonna try and keep it on people's minds, because people did that for us, and we're gonna do it. We're gonna give it right back.
Awesome, cool, Ro. I know, real quick, man, we got about a minute. So
So we donated 20% of our sales across the entire portfolio last week. Hurricane Katrina and the outpouring of love and support literally built LeBlanc Smith. I was here, so I know what that feels like. So we've always made it a point to give that back. And then for the rest of the month, each venue will have a cocktail, a $5 cocktail on the menu during happy hour. And all the proceeds of that will go to Harvey Relief, specifically SBP. And that's an idea that we actually got from Neil and those guys.
Good
so
organization.
Just
yeah.
So you know that this is true. And we didn't steal it, I don't think. We just borrowed. He influenced us. He inspired us.
I'm pretty sure we're not the first people to do
he
this.
He inspired.
It's okay.
He's an influencer. We're
so he's
that.
An influencer.
Ro, do me a favor real quick. Where can people find you online and find the restaurant group?
Robert LeBlanc at Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And the restaurant group is LeBlancSmith.com. Cabin, Mobar, Sylvain, and Barrel Proof.
Awesome. And that'll obviously be on our Facebook page and show notes, as it always is. And Neil, and you guys.
So our company is called CureCo. We're Cure and also Cane and Table. And you can find Cane and Table down in the French Quarter on 1113 Decatur. And then Cure is uptown on Ferret Street, 4905 Ferret Street. I'm on Facebook as Neil Bodenheimer, Neil Bodie on Instagram, and I think that's about all.
Cool.
All the pertinent info.
We'll find you. People will find you. You guys, thanks so much. I really appreciate the conversation. Ro, thanks for the hospitality.
Thank you, man. It's awesome.
Yeah,
thanks,
thank you.
Neil.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks, guys.
Ro, thanks for the great food and drink today.
Yeah. Oh, man. You're awesome.
Absolutely. Friends, thanks for tuning into the show. Really appreciate it. And, well, hey, until next week, cheers, y'all.